I'm Jim Wampler, writer and editor for Goodman Games.
And I'm Michael Curtis, writer and general lackey of Goodman Games. Hey, enjoy listening to Legends of Tabletop!
Hey everybody, this is John.
And this is Vince.
And you're listening to Legends of Tabletop.
Creating legends one die at a time.
And this is episode 44 of Legends of Tabletop. And I'm Leah Bond. And let's start off today with something cool over the last week. One thing that I have noticed is KFC in Hong Kong has come out with a new finger-licking good line of edible nail polish. It's only available to their Hong Kong customers, and this is disappointing to me. So, go ahead, John. Have you had anything cool happen to you in the last week?
Yesterday I got a playtest copy of Dice of Crowns from Thing 12 Games, so I'm looking forward to getting that on the table. They have a Kickstarter coming up in June, so we'll have a review up for that. And I also am getting an advanced reading copy of Star Spawn. It's written by Wendy Wagner. She's also one of the authors in the Autumn Cthulhu book that was just published by the Lovecraft e-zine, so I'm looking forward to reading that. So those are the cool things I have coming up this week. Jim, you have anything cool you're working on? Anything exciting?
Well, lots of things, but the coolest thing I ran into in the last few days is I went to a comic book store I'd never been to in my life in Milford, Ohio, for Free Comic Book Day on Saturday, and there, sitting on the shelf, was a homeless copy of Commandy, Last Boy on Earth, number one. And so even though I own many copies of it, I think I can find it that one a good home, and I snagged it.
Nice.
Oh, Jim's a big fan of the Commandy, Last Boy on Earth, right? Let's see. For me, I got notification that my 7th edition Call of Cthulhu is finally shipping.
Lucky you.
So that was a positive thing. And I got a drop shipment of the free RPG Day adventures that Goodman Games is going to be putting out.
But I thought we weren't allowed to talk about that, or I'd have said that.
No, this is we can mention it, but we can't give details.
Oh, okay. Put it out.
So speaking of Goodman Games and what's coming up, would you care to share anything with us other than that piece of information?
Well, this year it has been publicly announced that this year the free RPG Day release from Goodman Games will contain two adventures. Each one will be set in the new settings which are coming out for Dungeon Crawl Classics or Ancillary, using the Dungeon Crawl Classics rules. So the first adventure is going to be an adventure called The Madhouse Meet, written by yours truly, for the forthcoming Dungeon Crawl Classics Lankmar line. So that is going to be the first adventure in there, and there is a second, better and longer adventure, which will be followed by that, and I suppose Jim could probably mention what the title of that is and talk about that.
Mike's making fun because I went further over word count. The assignment. The second adventure that will be in the free RPG Day Goodman Games product is a Mutant Crawl Classics introductory adventure called The Museum at the End of Time. It's a level zero character funnel for Mutant Crawl Classics and has enough rules in the back of the adventure that you can actually run the system even though it's not out yet.
That sounds like a little bit fun.
Post-apocalyptic Dungeon Crawl Classics.
Yes, especially when you said the museum at the end of the universe. That makes me think of Douglas Adams.
There's a little Douglas Adams actually in the adventure. You're almost psychic.
There's a little Douglas Adams in all of us, actually.
Oh, yes.
Once you read it, it sticks in your head.
It does, but it does. Oh, my goodness. So when you say post-apocalyptic, like along what lines, would that be kind of like a cyberpunk Shadowrunny type of thing? Or
actually, no. It's a sunnier post-apocalypse than that. Ambiguous time, far, far, far in the future. So, I mean, if you want to put a number on it, a 30th century civilization has fallen thousands of years in the past, and the planet's recovering from that devastation by growing mile-high trees, hothouse jungles, and wild mutations all over the place.
Okay.
Explosive radiation of mutations in evolution.
Sounds a little bit like Gamma World.
Yeah.
Well, since that's my all-time favorite RPG after D&D.
Homage to?
Could be.
Yeah.
The game, when it comes out, will have a foreword by James M. Ward, if that gives you a clue.
Jim says that we bonded over a carton of cigarettes, but that's not actually true. We actually bonded over a mutual love for Gamma World at GaryCon. That's
great.
It's very true.
How did you guys feel about the 4th edition take on Gamma World? Were you a fan of that or no?
Well, 4th edition was the most playable. It was the Thaco edition. I find myself going back to 1st edition because I'm just kind of old and in the OSR movement these days. Mutant Futures, OGL version of Gamma World is also very good. What do you think, Mike?
I liked the 4th edition of it as a beer and pretzels kind of game. It's not something I would run as a campaign, but we did, when it came out, the idea, I liked the randomness of the character generation. I remember when we ran it a couple sessions at my local game store, and one of the characters ended up being a pile of flaming kittens. Like, that was his character class. So, yeah. So like, all right.
Dude, you're talking about 7th edition.
That's not 4th edition. No, but I know where you're going. When you said 4th edition, you meant the 4th edition D&D Power Scam. Yeah. That's the one you were talking about, correct?
Yep.
Right. Oh, then Mike's exactly right. It was, you know, fun to sit down and play for laughs once or twice, but you couldn't run a campaign in that.
I must say with Gamma World, definitely beer and pretzels. Beer and pretzels all the way. and yeah, if you can get a group of people together to run an entire campaign through that.
Well, may I speak seriously about game design for a moment?
Yes.
This is what I've tried to do with Mutant Crawl Classics, and that's why it's a little bit of a sunnier apocalypse, because that first setting you referred to, where everything's cyberpunk and nanotech and the skies are always dark, that's great for a change of pace RPG, but I don't think anybody plays that, you know, long term.
You're right.
So by bringing Mutant Crawl Classics a little closer to Dungeon Crawl Classics in terms of game mechanics in a more open-ended setting, I hope it has a longer play life.
Yeah. I'm excited to see it.
Did that make sense to anyone, or am I just?
It
makes
sense.
What?
DCC is the bomb.
Yeah, I mean, seeing as I have not played any of them yet being the key word yet, I am excited to get my hands on something. So definitely. Tell me about the, if you can, Michael, tell me about what you have planned.
Well, for the free RPG Day adventure? Or,
yes!
Okay. All right. Well, basically what, as Jim mentioned, with DCC, the part of the character generation process is what's called the zero-level funnel. So the idea was that you would make up, you know, every player would make up like 4 average Joe farmers, sheep herders whatsoever. They all go in the dungeon, and whichever one survives becomes your first level character. So it's kind of it's resource management. So if you have a really lousy character, he or she should be the one who opens up the suspicious looking box, you know. So
is this calling back to the old Traveler where you often die in character creation?
Very similar to it, yes.
Okay.
But so that's been a very popular aspect of Dungeon Crawl Classics. So as Jim mentioned, his adventure is a zero-level funnel. One of the things that we did when we were approaching DCC Lankmar is that we decided, as from a design perspective, the zero-level funnel works really well for Dungeon Crawl Classics, but not so well for a version of the game which is trying to recapture kind of the literary, what we're calling the literary style of Fritz Leiber, where in the case the introductory stories of where we meet Mauser and Pfaffer, they're already kind of heroes. So we've kind of eschewed doing the zero level funding for DCC Lankmar, and instead we have a process which we call the meet. M-E-E-T, not M-E-A-T, which is inspired by Leiber's story Ill Met in Lankmar, which is the kind of the introductory story where Mauser and Pfaffer meet for the first time. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to create, instead of doing a funnel, we kick off an adventure where all the characters, they come together for a reason, and usually we have to pit them against a greater danger where they realize that they have to work together in order to overcome whatever they're facing off against.
The enemy of my enemy type of setting?
Right. So this adventure in the free RPG day one is it's a meet adventure, and that's why it's called the Madhouse Meet. So it pits a group of characters together. They find themselves in a situation where they have to work together. They may not have known each other before the adventure begins, but hopefully by the time the adventure is over, they realize that the benefits of them working together, they have gained some experience, they have gained a little bit of wealth, they've gained a greater understanding about what's going on in the city of Lankmar around them, and possibly have earned a powerful enemy. So it's a way to kick off a DCC Lankmar campaign. So that's basically what we have in store for that. We will have, since DCC Lankmar hasn't been released, we will have pre-gens available. You can download them from the Goodman Games website on or before RPG free RPG day. There will also be a small summary of the kind of the rules changes as well. So in theory, all you have to do is hit the website and then go to your local game store and pick up a copy of the adventure, and you should be good to go that day. So.
Okay. So for those of us that have the TSR campaign materials that were set in Lankmar, didn't Fritz do anything with TSR regarding Lankmar?
The first Lankmar City of Adventure, which TSR put out, that was the first kind of official Lankmar supplement, not counting which was in Deities and Demigods, which actually predated that. That was kind of, it's funny, that set the tone for every other company's attempt to translate Fritz Leiber's stories into the role-playing genre. So I own all of TSR's entire line.
Okay.
So I am very well familiar with it, so I can't say that that had no impact on my design whatsoever. It had impact, good and bad. Being able to go back, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, be able to go back and go through the TSR stuff and said, you know, this was really good. I like what they did here. We should, you know, do something in this sort of vein so that, you know, it's true to that spirit. But there's other things that's like, I'm not even sure the person who wrote this adventure ever read any Fritz Leiber, because this just totally does not work in it whatsoever. So we're definitely not going to do that.
Okay.
So, yes.
There we go. Okay. I apologize.
That's okay. No.
I just have to shut the door.
Oh.
Kind of the fun thing of living in a home with a spouse is that they move about, and I did not want to have the webcast interrupted. So it's for your own good, really. It is.
I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Oh my goodness! But yeah, let's see.
So even the cat died. Yeah. I'm all on my own. No pants.
Oh,
I can do whatever I want.
No. Oh, Michael. So this will be out. When is Free RPG Day? Just remind us.
Free RPG Day is, I want to say it's June 6th. I should have known that before.
June 18th.
Okay.
June 6th.
I know because I had to correct it on the website.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. I can tell you, however, that Goodman Games was one of the initiators of Free RPG Day, and they were one of the ones. So they were actually the very first company to decide to contribute to Free RPG Day. This is the 10th Free RPG Day, started in 2007, and Goodman has been part of it every year. So this year we're going to be back again, and hopefully, you know, people will dig what kind of the change of pace that we have lined up for them. So
A good thing to let your listeners know is all you need to do to get one of these Free RPG Day products is go to freerpgday.com and use their store locator, and it's interactive, and it'll tell you where the nearest participating store to you is.
Excellent. That is good to hear. So freerpgday.com is the website?
Yes.
Okay. And we will definitely keep our listeners updated about that as it comes closer.
There's links in the show notes.
Okay. Thank you, John. John is a wonderful, wonderful person to have on board because he keeps track of all this stuff.
It's awesome. Yeah.
John, is it like this? Because when we're recording Save or Die, they'll constantly say, and the links will be in the show notes, and I know who has to actually do that on the page later. Yeah, so I'm just me. Like writing furiously, okay, so I don't forget any of them.
Yes. I try to preload things, so like the Goodman Games mm-hmm. website's up there, the link for the Free RPG Day site. I don't have anything else up there yet. But if something comes up, I'll write it down, or at least try to remember to do that.
So, Jim, tell us a little more about yours.
The setting or the particular adventure?
Both.
I'm an older gentleman, so my appendix in literature goes back to H.G. Wells. That's actually where the Museum at the End of Time came from, because I was a little kid, and that was my favorite part of the book, was when the time traveler was running from the Morlocks and hid out in an old museum where there was all this junk laying around. And what a perfect first adventure for characters whose job it is to go out into the ruins and come back home with artifacts. Here's a whole museum full of them for the taking. It sounds easy and appetizing, doesn't it?
Oh, that it does. That it does.
It's a character funnel. What's interesting about comparing and contrasting DCC Lankmar and Mutant Crawl Classics, and you can only do this with a really good core set of rules. The genius of what Joseph did with DCC is write a rule set that's so robust that Michael and I can do two separate settings with completely different or not completely different, but with in different game design intentions. Michael's gotten to tinker with some of the core rules of DCC for Lankmar, the way luck works and things like that. I took a different vector with Mutant Crawl Classics and tried to mirror the DCC rules just as closely as possible so that the games could be genre mashed seamlessly. It was a intention of Gary Gygax's originally at TSR. He wanted Boot Hill and Gamworld and D&D all eventually to be one rule set. And when I saw DCC first come out, the light bulb went off instantly. I'm like, well, this is my chance to maybe do for DCC what never really happened for Gamworld, not in the end. So, seven character classes in DCC, seven character classes in MCC, races class in DCC, races mm-hmm. class in MCC. In DCC, you get your spells from patrons and deities, extraplanar beings. In Mutant Crawl Classics, if you have a shaman, you get wetware programs from patron artificial intelligences that are, ancient global satellite networks and things like that. So it's a lot of fun. It's very much an homage to Gamma World, but mm-hmm. it's also completely DCC-ified, if that makes sense.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds a lot more in-depth than any Gamma World adventures that I have gone on.
Well, for a concrete example, the mutations in Gamma World is just a paragraph that tells you what your mutation does. In Mutant Crawl Classics, they work exactly like spells do in DCC. So each mutation has a table with results that go from 0 to 30 plus, because you can jack your roll up. So you roll a d20, and that mutation might fail and give you a defect all the way up to just completely decimating an entire population.
Oh, my.
It's a lot of fun to play.
You can wreak a lot of havoc with that. Wow. My goodness. So, John, I saw you raise your hand.
I did. I figured it was the best way to do this.
What's that?
Both of these systems are both the Dungeon Crawl Classic RPG setting or system. Is that what this is?
That's correct. It's as Jim was saying, one of the benefits about the DCC system, it's just such a good central spine. In the case of Mutant Crawl Classic, Jim had the ability to, he was able to design a game that was specifically set to use that spine, to build upon that. In my case, since I was doing a setting which was based on a pre-existing property, the library stories, I had to find a way to transform the system so it fit the setting. So basically I was doing the antithesis of what Jim was doing, but yet somehow we still managed to make it both work. There's a little bit more tinkering to the rules that I do, but the benefit of it is that it still works with that tinkering. And we also, when we were doing the DCC Lankmar game, we wanted to do it so that if you wanted to run it just as a straight DCC, you know, with the core rules, and not worry about what we were calling like the optional literary rules, it works that way too. So if you know Dungeon Crawl Classics, you will be able to pick up DCC Lankmar. You will be able to pick up Mutant Crawl Classics. Aside from, okay, this is a little different. All right, we're ready to go. We'll go. Let's go. So.
Cool.
Very cool. But yeah, as we were discussing very briefly before the broadcast began, creating a timeline for Lankmar.
Yes, very difficult. Because as we were saying, when Fritz was writing these stories, he wrote these stories, first of all, 50 years of his life. The first one was published in 1930. I don't know the date. I don't remember the date offhand, but he wrote them over a 50-year period exactly. So when he started writing them, he was just writing. What any author does. I have an idea for a story. You know, let's explore where this story goes. Let's write it out and see what happens. He wasn't worried about, okay, well, where does this fit in into the, you know, the overview? And when you have something which is, you know, you've been writing for 50 years of your life, of course you're going to get contradictions. Like you might have forgotten some small fact, and you know it might go against with something that you write in a later thing, and then it's up to the poor guy who has to adapt your stories to a role-playing game to try to make sense about what that contradiction is. which is entertaining, and we'll call it entertaining. We can think of a couple more adjectives for it. But
how many times did you have to read all the Fritz Leiber books to do this?
I read the entire series what I call 2.5 times over the last year and a half. So I read them originally. I read them in the chronological order they were published. And then I went back and I read them in the way that they were assembled to form the tie line, which is kind of what we were talking about. Yeah, it's very difficult to establish, like, okay, how old were they, you know, in this story, you know. We can get an idea of, okay, this one definitely takes place after this one, and so forth. But, you know, it's almost impossible to say this one takes place 5 years after this story, and this story is, you know, 2 years before this one. So it was challenging. I tried to do it, and I can see why nobody has done it yet.
Okay.
So, it would involve making a lot out of whole cloth, and I wasn't quite ready to do that. So.
All right. Do you think you'll ever be ready to do that in the future?
I don't know. We've got a lot of plans for DCC Lankmar, assuming people dig it. Joseph Goodman have already gone back, and we have, I've got 6 or 7 potential titles and things that we would like to do with it. Whether a timeline, I don't know. I might do it. Okay. I need a little time to step back.
Okay. I was just curiosity's sake. I mean, what is public domain? It's what is it? Death of the Author plus 20 years.
I know it's different. Depending on what nation you're in.
Okay.
So I know that for DCC Lankmar, we actually have a license from the Fritz Leiber estate. So I'm not quite sure if everything is technically in the public domain, or they have been, they're going through the process to keep it all within, the ownership of the estate itself.
So
they've been very easy to work with, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just saying as we near that time frame, mm-hmm. those things would probably be good to know.
I tried to get Goodman Games to bankroll a trip down to Houston, Texas, because that's where Fritz Leiber's collection of his private papers is in the University of Houston. But we couldn't pull it off. If there was a game convention that weekend in Houston, I could have gone down there, gone to the game session, and then hit the library.
Oh, dude, talk to me later, because some of us have got a secret trip to Robert E. Howard's house planned for North Texas. We're gonna get a rental car and go for it.
Yeah, with our luck, it'll be covered in snow.
Oh, no, on snow! Oh my goodness! So you're the closest, Jim, aren't you?
To Texas?
Yeah.
I mean, compared to the moon or something? Sure.
Oh gosh! No, never mind. I'm sorry.
To go all the way to Dallas-Fort Worth from Cincinnati, it would be 1,100 miles. So,
okay.
And the Texas state border is the halfway mark in that trip.
Oh, that's true. Texas is a huge state.
Drive 100 miles an hour. It's an 11-hour trip.
You might make it from Cincinnati to by state line and then get pulled over or something. I don't know.
Gen Con's a little closer to me. That's only 100 miles.
That's not bad.
I'm obviously a little prejudiced because I'm friends with Michael, but I've read all this DCC Lankmar stuff, and Michael, I can say unreservedly, is far better writer than I am. I'm kind of a hack with a lot of great ideas. Mike's Lankmar stuff, anybody, you don't have to be a Fritz Leiber fan to dig what he's laying down in these adventures. It's really cool stuff that hasn't happened in fantasy role-playing games before.
Okay.
As Mike alluded to, the TSR stuff tended to gloss over some of the peculiarities of Lankmar, and Mike's embraced that.
I hope so. We've been working on this for a year and a half. We've been playtesting and everything. It's gotten to the point where, sometimes it's difficult to see the forest for the trees. I mean, the playtesters have been very, very useful to us because they can take a look at it and they're playing stuff and they're realize, they say, well, like, what about this? I'm like, well, I know about that in my head. I didn't remain it to the paper, so let me go back and redo that. But thank you very much, Jim. Thank you for the praise, and allow me to return it and say, although I may be a better writer, Jim, you are a better artist. Okay.
Well, I can't argue with that. I've seen your art. But what's great about Goodman Games is that they playtest the hell out of everything. So the DCC Lankmar has been under playtest at least 2 years I know of. Longer.
Mm-hmm. Two Gary Cons. Wow. But technically that's a year in between. We had the first official meeting about Lankmar at 2 Gen Cons ago. So technically it's been about a year and a half that we've been working on it, playtesting and everything. So
Mutant Crawl Classics is 3 solid years of playtesting to get out. So I mean, both systems are rock solid and play great.
Do you guys do a lot of conventions? Since we're kind of talking about that a little bit.
This is actually a light year for me. So I think I only did 4 or 5 this year, but some years it's six or seven, depending on where. Goodman Games, I mean, Goodman Games has what's called the, every year they do the world tour, quote unquote, the world tour. And I think we hit up about 20 conventions, I guess, on average. You know, if it's not official Goodman Game crew, it's what we call the road crew. We have, you know, kind of disciples of the Dark Master who go and run DCC, you know, at their local conventions and help spread the word. So yeah. Jim, you ran, Jim has been playtesting Museum for, that was pretty much like the first one you ever ran, wasn't it, for your, like your home group?
Yes, that I've run that, I could run that adventure in my sleep. It's to the point where I change it up just so I don't get bored. and what's coming out on Free RPG Day is a scientific distillation of all of that.
Oh, wow. Nice. So how long would you say that that each module has been built to take run through to completion?
I'm laughing because the design goal from Joseph Goodman is something that can be played in a four-hour session. I have trouble hitting that.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, the Madhouse Meet can be done in 4 hours. It's, you know, it's designed to be, you know, a single session.
All right. And yours as well, Michael?
Yeah, that was, yeah.
I'm sorry. The Madhouse Meet, and then the museum. Well, remind us what the title is again.
The Museum at the End of Time.
At the End of Time.
The design intent with Dungeon Crawl Classics Adventures is that, you know, as we all start to get older and we aren't teenagers with infinite amounts of spare time and we become soccer moms who still game and
have
jobs and families,
yes,
that the adventure should be something you could sit down and do in a session.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So about 4 hours for both of these?
Well, mine's 4 hours.
I can make it happen in 4 hours, yes, ma'am.
But if you weren't rushing, would it be more or less, do you think?
Oh, well, this is the value of playtesting, and I'm grateful that we have playtesters besides ourselves, which is very important in playtesting. You can't rely on yourself because your home campaign, your guys get used to how you run a game. But yes. Sure, you could do it in 4 hours.
Okay.
But it would certainly stretch.
All right. Just had to double check there. Hmm. Oh man, so that's awesome. You do get an awful lot of time from Goodman for a lot of value for something that you give away on this one day.
Oh, the free print RPG Day adventure isn't even the end.
Yes.
Because the road crew that Michael was talking about have access to a completely separate adventure that's. You can get just sign up to run a public game as part of Road Crew 2016, and Joseph will send you this adventure in PDF format. And since I'm the editor and co-writer of it, it seems like I would know the title of that adventure right now. Oh, The Shambling Undead.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Character funnel with a, you know, fantasy zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
Who doesn't love the zombies?
I know. Well, there are some people that don't love the undead.
And I write a tiny chunk of that one, but it's primarily written by the Dungeon Crawl Cabal, which is a little secret group of us writers who collaborate and do two or three of these adventures for Goodman Games every year.
Oh, wow. Now, speaking of cabal, one of you two said something about cabal. Remind us what that is.
The Dungeon Crawl Cabal or cabals in general?
Someone said something about a podcast with the word cabal in it, I think. Or I could be wrong. I could always be wrong.
We were talking off air before we started about the shocking news that there wasn't like some central Goodman Games skyscraper located in Santa Clara,
that's
California.
That's true.
That the writers are scattered across the country, but that's advantageous because that puts us in all these places to do regional cons.
Oh, that's true. I apologize.
But there is another podcast that we can talk about, the Save or Die podcast.
Yes.
Jim.
Oh, I would love to talk about the Saber Die podcast. Sure. I mean, if you want to talk about podcasts, I know a lot of good ones that I've either participate in or have participated in.
Tell us about Saber Die.
Saber Die podcast is an entire podcast focused on classic D&D. The version, okay. Any version of D&D that came in a box set from the Little Brown books up through the Mentor Red Box, we cover it. And not just the old modules and adventure modules, but all the new stuff that the OSR is producing for that setting. And, you know, with some wiggle room because we talk about DCC and because it has a very old school theme to it. There's a wonderful DCC podcast called Spellburn that I was a host on originally, which you can find at spellburn.com. It's a whole podcast dedicated to Dungeon Crawl Classics, and a second Dungeon Crawl Classics podcast called Sanctum Sacrorum. Sorry, my dyslexia just kicked in. Help me out, Mike.
Yes. I just call it the Sanctum, so it's kind of like a cabal.
Okay. Yes. Bob Brinkman, Jen Brinkman, and Dave Beatty will talk about a Dungeon Crawl Classics adventure and a book from Appendix N, like Fritz Leiber.
Okay.
And do a whole podcast about that. Mm-hmm. What am I leaving out?
Don't you have like another podcast that you do or something, or is that kind of?
Oh crap! Yeah, I hadn't done an episode in so long I forgot about it. I do one all by myself that I need to get back on the horse because Maura Rasmussen wants to come on and talk about Top Secret, called Designers and Discourses, where I have a single game designer on and do a one-on-one interview where we talk about the design intents and influences of a particular game. And past episodes featured Mr. Curtis, Jim Ward, Tim Kask, the author of the Mouse Guard RPG. I had James Raggy IV on to talk about Lamentations of the Flame Princess. It's a little more in-depth, journalistic sort of podcast.
Okay. Now, with the game mechanics, you touched on that just a very little bit earlier when you were talking about the seven races. And then, of course, it's going to have seven races in this setting as well. And then you've got the spell types. And, what was it, the different classes of spells, and then you were talking about the different mutations to match one with the other.
Well, I'll tell a secret, and why I give the bow to Michael being the superior writer between us is because Michael's language skills are better than mine, and he could write prose fiction, whatever he wants. I'm much happier writing game engines and game mechanics than I am adventures, personally. Mm-hmm. Which you can tell because when you pick up my adventures, there's always a bunch of extra tables and things jimmied into the adventure, like one-off rules. I'm terrible for that.
If we just want to give an overview of the general game mechanics for Dungeon Crawl Classics, especially if people are going to be going into Free RPG Day not quite knowing what to expect, Joseph Goodman, his whole design philosophy when he did Dungeon Crawl Classics was, what if Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson back in the early 70s had access to the open game license for the D20 system for third edition D&D. So basically he took that as a starting point and then just stripped away everything until he came down to a very old school 1970s style of dungeon crawl. So there's no skills in DCC, there's no feats, there's no, you know, there's no prestige classes, anything like that. But it still is all based on a D20 roll, add your modifier, and, you know, and high is good. But what Joe, one of the things is that people, there, you know, people love, you know, this is not a quality judgment whatsoever, but there are people who find, you know, third edition or Pathfinder to be very math intensive. So what Joe did is like he wanted to keep the math out, and Joe likes what he calls the funky dice. Like, he loved the old school Zaki 100-sided die, the size of a golf ball that you rolled and it kept rolling forever. Yes. And everything. And Game Science and Luzaki, they came out, they had like a D14, they had like a 16-sided die, a 24-sided die, all the rest of that stuff. So what Joe said, like, I love these dice, why not have a system which uses these? So he came up with what's called the dice chain. So rather than you get like a +2 to this and you get a +4 to this, but you're -3 to this and everything like that, you just, okay, somebody's coming up the hill at you and you know, you have the advantage, instead of rolling a D20, roll a D24. or you know, or you know, you're ankle deep in mud, and you know it's raining, and there's arrows all over the place, and so instead of rolling a d20 to hit with your arrow, roll a d14, you know, because it sucks, you know. So it's a great little mechanic, and gamers love dice. You know, people say, well, I don't want to buy dice. You're lying.
Yeah.
So it's funny. It's before DCC came out, it was very difficult to get any of the quote unquote funky dice, anything like the D3 to the D30 and something like that. In the last 3 years, like, you go to every con and people are carrying them. You know, they got, like, I have, you know, Impact Miniatures, Coppola, Game Science is making them again. If you go to Gen Con this year, I guarantee there will be, you know, 4 or 5 booths which will just have funky dice for sale.
Knife fights over which is the best shape D3.
Oh, gosh.
Did you like a three-sided die with Roman numerals or, you know, with 1D3 twice on it? Yeah, so... So that's, you know, so if you've never played DCC before, but you have some passing familiarity with, with 3.5 or Pathfinder or stuff like that, you're going to find a lot of stuff that's very familiar, but it has interesting little quirks. We mentioned luck a couple of times, and the way that luck works in Dungeon Crawl Classics is everybody has a luck score, which is anywhere from 3 to 18, you know, old school attribute checks, but it's an expendable resource. So if you have, you know, I was like, oh, I missed that roll by like 2 points. Well, you can spend 2 points of luck. And then now your luck score goes from 12 to 10 and so on and so forth. Then, luck goes away faster than it comes back. And
yeah.
Of course, there will be times when the referee will say, okay, you need to make a luck check. Or especially it happens, okay, you've been quote unquote killed. You know, are you dead or are you just mostly dead? And at that point, you roll a 20-sided die and you want to roll your luck score or less. So if you've spent a lot of your luck and your luck score is 4 and you now are mostly dead, you know, you're like, oh, you know. It's fun little things like that which make DC, although it comes from the open game license, it's become its own beast at this point. And with the changes we've done for Lankmar, we've added new tweaks to the luck system. Jim has obviously taken the entire system and moved it, 10 centuries into the future, and added all sorts of mutations and funky artifacts and new character classes, which in a lot of ways, reflect those in the DCC core system. So again, if you've just played DCC, you are going to be able to play Mutant Crawl Classics, or you're going to be able to play DC Lankmar. So it's kind of like the little, it's the Rosetta Stone that, can translate all amongst these various systems.
So. Yeah.
Good save, man. All that's what I meant to say. Good save, Mike.
Okay. with what you had said about luck, that for some reason that makes me think of RuneQuest.
RuneQuest, yeah, the old, well, yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe it was just an errant thought. I'll just put it over in the corner.
Mechanically wise, not really. I mean, RuneQuest is, the basic role-playing system is, it's all skill-based where, this is all the old-school level-based and stuff. But, the
Moxie, that's what I was thinking of.
Okay, right.
Yeah,
so.
That's all. Yeah. So, just a brief passing thought.
So.
Well, the new 7th edition Call of Cthulhu now has luck added in as well. Different mechanically, but interesting to see that as a resource to use.
Right, but Call of Cthulhu has always had the luck, the luck attribute. It has it become? I don't think it's become expendable though. Isn't 7th edition? But I could be wrong.
It's a set skill. I have a section and you roll for it and you also calculate your skill based on different rolls that you make.
Right.
So it's not a changeable attribute.
Right.
Maybe I'm thinking of the push aspect now where you can push your rolls. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Right.
Okay, it could be because I have not played the 7th edition COC yet.
I know Jim hasn't.
don't make fun of me, man. Everybody has their game system they don't like.
Yeah.
That just happens to be mine, which I don't get because in the character funnel, I love dying all the time. You'd think I'd like Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, Yes. No, it's because you spend so much energy making your characters in Call of Cthulhu to see them die. Like, no!
Did you have a bad experience, Jim, playing Call of Cthulhu, or just the mechanically or thematically just doesn't appeal to you?
I've only played one game of Call of Cthulhu, and it was horrific. Because it was after, after Gary Con had completely shut down, those of us who were flying out Monday were just hanging around, and Mr. Curtis offered to run us through Call of Cthulhu. So my only Call of Cthulhu game involved Mr. Curtis role-playing this evil little woman in a boarding house with his glasses down the end of his nose doing the scariest impression of a little old lady you've ever heard. It was the most horror-filled thing that happened in the whole game.
So it wasn't the game system or the game master that turned him off. It was my excellent acting chops. I just terrified Jim to the bone that, you know, this idea of Call of Cthulhu, he goes through post-traumatic stress. And of course, the fact that one of the other players went insane and started shooting randomly in the middle of the ghoul warren and took out more of the party than the actual ghouls did, well, you know, hey.
Yeah, don't tell Jen Brinkman, but I still haven't forgiven her for that.
So in Call of Cthulhu terms, it was a rousing success.
Sounds like, yeah. I mean, that sounds like it's exactly how a COC game is supposed to go.
Well, we all have our play styles. In TCC, I like to play a wizard who waits to the very end of the adventure and then burns all his abilities to the Stone Age so he can get off a scorching ray that opens up a magma vent to the core of the planet.
Okay.
Sounds legit.
Totally.
Other than DCC, do you guys have any favorite games that you like to play or any systems that you enjoy?
That's funny. I think I know yours, Mike. Lord of the Rings miniatures, right?
Well, that's one of it. But actually, that came into. I'm a big fan of the One Ring RPG. I just kind of got turned on to that about a year and a half ago, and I would never have guessed that I would run any sort of role-playing game set in Middle-earth, just because it just seemed like intellectually and the knowledge base you would have to have in order to tackle, you know, Professor Tolkien's world would just be too much, just too much to do for something fun. But Cubicle 7 really did a knockout job with the new One Ring game, and we had so much fun running that I'm looking forward to doing that again. Love that one RPG wise, but you know, Joe and I are both old school. I'd like the BX D&D for that, basic D&D. That's my favorite, actually, when it comes to fantasy, aside from DCC, obviously.
I enjoy first edition Metamorphosis Alpha, which is the most cantankerous rule set 1976 could produce, but it's awesome fun. And just like, you know, The standard stuff, board games, Red Dragon Inn. I'm more of a, for like board games, more of like a beer and pretzel board gamer. Mm-hmm. Although Mike drugged me, at one Gary Con, Mike drugged me into a chainmail match, and actually it was a lot of fun. I never played a serious sand table miniatures game in my life, and we had a blast.
In Gary Gygax's basement in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. So.
Oh, see, I left out the good part.
So. So we basically played miniature war games where D&D was invented. So we were pretty much, you know,
We have a suspicion that Gary's ghost was with us that evening in the basement of the house because – was it your die roll? Were you
no,
the one
it wasn't mine.
Okay. Mike Menard was running us, and we were rolling our D6s in this little wooden box, and somebody corked off a roll, and a D6 shattered. And I've never seen that happen before in my life. And we all got – quiet, and we're like, Gary's here with us.
Man, that's crazy.
I took a picture. I have proof.
I've seen my brother shatter one with a hammer, but that's a little different.
It's not quite supernatural. That's
no.
Yeah, so it's actually, you know, the idea about Jim mentioned Metamorphosis Alpha is one of the great things about doing this work for Goodman Games is that mm-hmm. Joe is really big about the history of gaming. I mean, so just 2 years ago we did the deluxe edition reprint of the original Metamorphosis Alpha rules in this giant archival version of it. We put out an entire line of adventures and supplements. Get basically Metamorphosis Alpha under Goodman Games has got more support right around the 40th anniversary than it ever did from TSR, and Jim Ward loves us for it. So, and we just did a big Kickstarter this year. We're doing a big reprint of the old Judges Guild modules from D&D and AD&D modules, which were 76, I think. And they were the first kind of third-party publishers for a role-playing system for D&D. So having the opportunity to, go back and I got the opportunity to actually write kind of bonus material for these classic adventurers. So that's every day, every day I'm happy I work for Joe because I get what I call the mysterious emails where I'll just get an email. We got the Lankmar license, and he just sent me an email with just a picture of the license. And that's it's like, what's going on? Or when Metamorphosis Alpha came out, I got an email. It's like, do you know Metamorphosis Alpha? And do you think you could write for it? I'm like, what's going on? So it's a great opportunity.
I was a teenager in the 70s. If you'd have told 18-year-old me someday you're going to get to write Metamorphosis Alpha Adventures and you'll be friends with Jim Ward, I wouldn't have believed you.
That is pretty cool. Come full circle like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All my 18-year-old dreams are coming true, and it's exhausting.
Hey, be careful what you wish for. You might get it.
Because we're talking about the good parts of Joseph Goodman. You want to hear some of the bad parts? Once Joseph figures out you can hit word count and you'll write anything he drops in your lap, bang, 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 bang. That's your nights and weekends for a while.
Okay.
Well, let me ask you this, because you guys are, sort of living the dream there, right? So you're getting to write for games that you played as a teenager in the 70s. A lot of times I feel like because, most of us, our time is limited, when we get to play recreationally, that it makes that time that you spend at the table that much more enjoyable because you're like, hey, I got 4 hours this Friday, and we're not playing again until next month, and you get so much out of that. When you do it every day, and this is your job, is there ever a point where you're like, games today?
Well, it's not that, but I'll tell you what does happen. Every single person I ever met or know of has had the thought, who writes in the game industry started with the thought, great, I'm writing for the game industry, now I get the game all the time. And the opposite happens. As you get more and more deadlines to hit, suddenly your time to actually game starts going.
Mm-hmm.
Am I lying, Mike?
No, I mean, it's really easy to lose the enthusiasm, so you have to learn to manage it. I've been doing this, I was just trying to think of this today, I guess 2009, I want to say, is when I first got my foot in the door, so we're going on 7 years of me kind of working in the industry, which is, small time compared to what some people have been doing it. So it's one of those things is that a lot of stuff that I write for Goodman Games, I don't really run DCC, for my private home group. I run it, at conventions and stuff like that, with the fans and really get a lot of feedback with them and enjoy doing it there. But when I get home, you have to draw that line between work and between, recreation. Because if you're just doing work all the time, you're gonna burn yourself out, which is why, I said I ran the One Ring campaign for a year, which was something completely different than what I do for my, my usual job. I've kind of gotten into miniature wargaming over the last year and a half because it's completely different than what I do. So it's like anything. It's the old line that I always remember is that when your avocation becomes your vocation, you get no vacation. And that's really easy to do when you're working like in the RPG industry. So you have to know when to have me time. So, and yeah. not everybody can make the balance. And that's why people are in there. You know, you go back and you see, oh, this was a great module, or this was a great supplement. This guy did really good work. This woman wrote something really incredible. You know, I would love to see what else they've done. And you realize that they haven't done anything because they had their moment and they're like, you know what? I can make a lot more money doing something a lot more. I can go back and do this for fun again. So, mm-hmm. And
so. Well, you definitely have to figure out a way, the proper motivations. And for the love of the hobby has to be part of that because, you know, you two can make hundreds of dollars a year writing for the RPG industry.
Yeah, I say I work overtime hours for part-time pay. That's how I say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, motivation. My big motivation is keeping the lights on. No, that's as I'm.
Well, you know, when you made that move in my head, I was making fun of you, Mike, and now I'm doing it too. So Mike's been doing this a lot longer than I have, and this has been the history of our friendship. Is Mike tells me he forecasts the future. He tells me what it's going to be like, and I listen to him and go, no, not me. And then it happens to me too.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I go to conventions. I have people come up to me, and you know, we have a mutual friend who's luckily doing this. You know, now you know, he's got his foot in the door, and he's doing well. But you know, everything I signed for him when he was still a fan, it's like, you know, it's like it's not too late. You know, people are like, Mike, do you have any advice for, you know, aspiring game designer? Yeah, it's not too late to get out. You know, don't do it.
That's my advice. It's not too late. Get out now.
Oh my goodness.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Well, I mean. And the same can be said. I mean, I just do this for a hobby, but still I find myself mostly I write reviews regarding video games, and it's just hit me. It's like, you know, this is somebody's lifeblood. I can't so easily discount this. So I'm trying to find that happy balance between critiquing it, but in a way that is constructive, you know?
You're talking about doing it earnestly. You're talking about doing it earnestly, mm-hmm. which is the meeting point between not taking yourself too serious and still keeping it fun.
Yes.
That's the same thing goes for. I was just saying to Jim, the same thing goes for podcasting as well.
Well, you're right. I mean, there was a point where I was doing four or five at a time, and now I'm just doing Save or Die and my own thing when I want to, and that's no bang on any of the other podcasts I was on or the people I worked with. I just reached a point where I couldn't do all that and the other stuff I wanted to do, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, it takes up a lot of your time. Like Michael said, it's hard. You got to draw the line somewhere, and
yes.
You know, you got to have your me time. But you know, when you're doing it even as a hobby, you know, it just creeps and creeps and creeps, mm-hmm. and it really keeps you busy.
But you know what? It's a privilege to have these problems. That's the part I always come back to. Yeah. I have problems today in areas where I never had areas before. So.
Isn't it wonderful how once these spaces get created, what possibilities since just become more than possibilities, they become solid and just there, and we take them for granted.
Well, I'm going to go way off the reservation for a second.
Go.
Felicia Day was just in Cincinnati a couple weeks ago for a book signing, and I got her book, and it is the best book on earth to read. For because she is very from the heart and very open about her struggles with like trying to find the place where she could be the creative nerd she wanted to be and be rewarded for it and all the trials and tribulations of dealing with that. And it just I you know, I found it to be extremely inspiring. It spoke to me.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. I have never heard of that. I was unaware that she had written a book.
It's a wonderful book, and it's not like it's any hard read or anything. It's very, you know, it's in her voice, so it's very casual. But it's very open and honest and frank about the creative process and how you manage that when you're having anxiety attacks or everybody's telling you everything you do is shit.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What's the name of the book?
I'm so dyslexic. I had it right here on my desk and finished it a few days ago.
That's okay.
If you just Google Felicia Day biography, that you'll get it.
Like, isn't something like it's okay to be weird on the internet or something like that? Or
you can never be weird on the internet. There
that's
you go.
What, yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's true. There's Rule 34 for everything. So yeah.
So if people go to the website and use our affiliate Amazon affiliate link and order that book.
Yes, oh, please see, do.
Now you're talking. Somebody gets paid.
Yeah. It's a couple of pennies, but hey, you know.
Every little bit counts.
Yep. I oh, will man. Put a link in the show notes.
Oh, yes, John.
I wrote it.
We're just talking about that. Now I'm doing it to you. Sorry.
Let's see. Final five. It's getting close to that time. To the final five, wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, we could. We've been about an hour or so. So if you want to roll into the final five questions, there.
Uh-oh.
I'm gonna have to. Everybody gets questions. I did not tell you guys. So you're my unsuspecting victims.
Here comes anxiety attack.
You could be any tree. What would you be?
Star Wars or Star Trek?
Oh, Star Trek. And anybody else that says Star Wars is wrong.
Star Wars.
I quit.
I am also going to have to go with Star Trek simply because of the massive amounts of really good thought-provoking content. So.
I've got no problem with Star Trek, but you want to know something? I'm a romantic at heart.
What does that have to do with Star Trek?
At heart, I'm a scoundrel. I want to be cruising through the galaxy with a big furry, you know, co-pilot. And that's, no.
He's gone to black.
Well, I like them both.
I have an old Heron.
Aww.
He looks at me and makes me realize that, yes, okay, I'm getting up there too, but I can still have
both. All right, well, if we're going to go by desk toys, then I have to change my answer to Doctor Who.
That wasn't part of the question, Wobbler.
Quiet, you.
Okay. Lost in space, huh?
Mm. Now, John, would you like to take one of the final five?
Sure.
Because I have forgotten the rest of
it. Oh, my goodness. All right. So the next one is tabletop or video game?
I think I should be nervous when I say tabletop.
Yeah, I like the good computer game, but tabletop, because it's social. I can articulate a very intellectual response to this. The difference between Dungeons & Dragons and World of Warcraft is the difference between a novel and a movie. When you go see a movie, we all see the same thing at the same time, but when we all read a novel, we have an individual fantasy experience in our heads. And plus, you get to sit across the table and have fun with people.
That's true.
That is what I enjoy about tabletop and even board games and the other stuff is because, you know, the game kind of fades to the background in some instances. You're just kind of hanging around, you know, having a couple of beers and, you know, just getting a chance to interact and hang out. And it's so important now. You know, everybody has their phones and everybody's so disconnected. I think that our hobby is really great at, you know, bringing people back together. So
very, very true. And I must agree that I do look forward to Friday night's games because I don't socialize as well in any other environment, really, without anybody going to check their phones every 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're all guilty of it. I mean, I am too. My brother yells at me all the time. I got my first smartphone last year, I guess, right as things started to kind of take off for the podcast, and I always have my phone, and he's like, you're like a 13-year-old girl with the phone. And I'm like, but I'm working, you know, like, it's, you know, I'm doing podcast stuff. It's not work. You're fooling around.
Oh, man. See, I got mine right before Necronomicon.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
So. No, I that's probably about, like, early in the summer when I got my first one. Yeah, you have computers at home. It's like, well, what do I need a smartphone for? Like, if I can't just sit at the computer, like, what's the point?
But, oh, God, at first I thought Jim was going for his phone. It's like,
well, I was just going to say, I'm the wrong guy to talk to this about because I slide my smartphone into my 3D goggles.
Oh, that's awesome. I just downloaded an STL to print my own.
Oh, like cardboard VR goggles?
No, to print my own pair of VR goggles.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh man. Oh, the third Final Five.
DC or Marvel?
Yes. And then I just remembered one more.
Oh no, we lost Mike.
No.
We pissed Mike off. He had enough shenanigans.
Oh.
Bummer. Come back, Mike.
Yes, please do.
Well, that's unfortunate. Well, he's got the link. He should be able to.
He gets a pout.
Here, I will send a link again.
But yeah, DC or Marvel, Jim?
Oh,
if you care to.
If you force me into a preference, I would say Marvel. However, my true allegiance is to whichever company Jack Kirby was doing art for at the time, because okay. I'm a Jack Kirby acolyte.
That makes perfect sense, and yay, welcome back. Can you turn on your camera?
No, he's just pouting. He won't say anything.
Oh, no. I'll have to attack him with that question after he turns his camera back on. But, yeah, if you had to choose one superpower, what would you choose and why?
Telekinesis, because it includes most of the other superpowers.
It's like wishing for more wishes.
Yes, it is. I mean, I can have a telekinetic shield. I can fly with telekinesis.
That you can.
All right, and the other one would be sci-fi or fantasy.
I love them both, but I'm more of a sci-fi guy, obviously. I'm writing a science fiction version of a fantasy game.
Okay.
That's fair.
That makes perfect sense.
I came to science fiction earlier in life. You know, I grew up reading science fiction and found fantasy, you know, high school age.
Yeah, because you had mentioned something about H.G. Wells. Would that have been one of the very first times that you had been exposed to fiction of that nature?
God bless my father. For all his problems, he was giving me H.G. Wells and Jules Verne to read when I was 8 or 9. And, you know, from there, I went straight to Heinlein and the classics, Asimov, Clark. Mm-hmm. There he is!
Apologies.
Hey!
Yay! Now we get to torture you with the same questions.
My computer decided it was time to go to the blue screen and install updates. I think it was upset that I picked tabletop games over video games. So.
Oh. Well, you missed the question, flammable or inflammable?
Yes.
Ooh, a good one. Oh, you know what? I like inflammable because it sounds more pretentious.
Okay. Got more letters. You sound smarter.
Good answer to a question I made up on the spot. Thank you.
Okay. It's almost like I've done this before.
DC or Marvel?
DC or Marvel? Marvel in my youth, DC as I got a little bit older, but only Batman and Constantine.
Okay.
I grew up on the X-Men, but you know, after I got out of puberty, Batman.
Okay. I was more of a check it out. Here's some Garth Ennis. Check out Preacher. Oh, okay. So I love Preacher.
Are you watching the AMC TV
no.
show?
No, I had better. I will either hate it or adore it.
I don't know how they can make a TV show out of that comic. I adored the comic.
Yeah, it's cable.
Should I even try?
Uh-oh.
Sounds like
Because I mean, try. But if I visit it and it doesn't live up to my expectations, I will forever hate it.
Do or do not. There is no try.
I know. But, oh, yes, there was another one. If you could pick one superpower, what would it be and why?
The ability to always have a good idea.
That has got to rank up there as one of the better ones that I've heard.
Spoken like someone who's experienced emptying the idea drawer faster than it will refill itself.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And then the ability to clone myself so he can write out the good ideas so I can actually get stuff done. So I will be Mr. Wright. That would be my superpower. That would be my name. Mr. Wright, W-R-I-T-E. That's it.
Did we already go over sci-fi or fantasy?
Not with Michael.
Okay.
Sci-fi or fantasy? I know. You know what? I'm gonna have to say sci-fi, but
interesting.
But the reason for that is, I think originally there was no distinction between fantasy and sci-fi, and I think in the early days there was a lot more fantasy, which was lumped under sci-fi. So I think sci-fi, if you want to take it in the traditional sense, is a lot more broader. Because, you get things like Journey to the Center of the Earth, you get, 2,000 Leagues Under the Sea, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which is science fiction. You get, Edgar Rice Burroughs' Barsoom, the whole John Carter of Mars, which is technically sci-fi. But yeah, so sci-fi just because it's a bigger umbrella.
Okay.
That's fair.
It does cover a broader range, much broader range. Yeah.
And, I love you, man. All right.
Especially that older sci-fi too, because there was a little bit more unknown, so it's just kind of a mixture of the genres a little bit.
Yeah, it would have all fallen under the Arkham House umbrella or the Weird Tales.
Right.
Well, H.P. Lovecraft, perfect example.
I mean, it trapped in the halls of Eric. Wait, in the halls of Eric's, I think he shadow wrote with someone else. Or co-wrote with someone else, and I like that because to me that was like the first instance for me of historically a fiction work involving something to replace oxygen in an atmosphere that was not filled with enough oxygen, just with the sponges that that gave off the gas, and you breathe the gas, so. Oh well.
No, I'm a big fan of the super dense material some beings are made of. That's because my mind wants to work out how that's scientifically possible.
Yeah. I'll leave the closing up to you, John.
Oh, okay. If you guys have, go ahead.
No, you're tapping out. I'm not really tapping out yet. I just wanted to thank both of you wonderful gentlemen for taking the time out of your evenings to share with us what you have been up to and what Goodman Games has been up to with the development of your DCC and MCC modules. And I greatly, greatly appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I'm tapping out.
Thank you very much for having us.
There's the tap. I'm trying to send a text to my daughter. One second. You tapped too early.
I did. Okay. I should have waited.
Put the smartphone down. We're tabletop.
Yeah. Yeah, this is tabletop, man.
Yeah. Do you guys have websites? You want to promote any websites? Give us throw all that stuff out there so people can go check it out. Either your personal sites, obviously we have a link for Goodman Games up in the show notes already.
Nothing that I'm updating.
Fair enough.
talking a couple of years ago, yeah. Yeah, I used to have a blog before I started doing this for a living, and now I don't have time to do a blog anymore, so yes.
Mm-hmm. So, I like your blog, man. Well, when listeners go to the Goodman Games website and see the best web technology 1998 had to offer, I'm actually part of a crew that's building the new Goodman Games website. So very soon there will be a new modern website at that address. It's not there now.
Okay.
If you want to know what's on Jim's mind, the best way to do is go into the conventions, track us down. We'll be more than happy to sit and talk to you, for as long as you want. We love the fans. We love hanging out with you folks. And we are completely honored that you people actually spend your hard-earned money to, keep us a level just above abject poverty for another day. So thank you very much. We appreciate it. So.
And if the convention doesn't have a problem with it, I'm one of those GMs. I've always got room for one more. So just have a seat.
No wonder you can't get your games in less than 4 hours.
I always say yes to the players. That's my philosophy.
Mm-hmm. There you
Absolutely.
Go.
And then kill them.
Well, I mean, my role-playing game experiences, the very first ones were at a convention chasing around some friends of mine, and then it's like, oh, we have no more room. Oh, we have no more room. Hey, come join us. I know we're packed, but come on in. Mm-hmm. You know, and that would have chalked up to one of my very first experiences.
Well, this is why I'm sorry, go ahead.
Which was playing Call of Cthulhu. So, and that experience has lasted, we'll say.
I was just going to say, that's why I'm such a fan of Felicia Day, because if we can't be inclusive in the nerd kingdom, where can we?
Exactly.
That's true. But if you guys don't have anything to promote, I would also like to thank you guys for coming on and spending some time with us, answering some questions, and kind of, you know, promoting what's going on over there at Goodman Games. We're happy to, you know, try to help drive people over there and get you some products sold and, you know, expose you to maybe a greater audience. You know, people that maybe haven't checked it out before will come over and check it out. So we're obviously glad to be a part of that sort of experience.
Well, again, thank you for having us. We appreciate it. Thank you for helping spread the gospel of DCC.
It's always a pleasure to be a corporate shill. I'm good at it.
Yeah. There you go. As always, you can find us at legendsoftabletop.com. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can reach out to us at legendsoftabletop@gmail.com. As always, we are on all of the social media websites, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, YouTube, you name it, you can find us there. Just pop us in your Google search. Every Monday we release actual play episodes, so make sure you're subscribed to that. And normally Tuesdays and Wednesdays we have these interviews that we like to do, so we'd appreciate it if you would also check that out. If you could leave us a review on iTunes, that's great. It helps us out immensely. Doesn't have to be 5 stars. Hell, you could give us 1 star. Just go ahead and leave us a review. We really appreciate it. So thank everybody for showing up tonight. Thank everybody for checking us out, and we'll catch you next time.
See ya!
This podcast is a proud member of the Legends of Tabletop Broadcast Network. For more gaming-related content, please visit www.legendsoftabletop.com.